This is a lecture given at St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas. Visit our website, stdave.org.
So we're doing this series on waiting. Under the wisdom of Dr. Mona West, she said this is one of the things she set up before she stepped away from this work. And she thought that waiting might be a really relevant theme, not just for Advent as it always is, but particularly as we ourselves are in a season of transition. So we're waiting for a Christ child, and we're also waiting for the next phase in our life together here at St. David's. There's a slide at the end that'll show you. There's a really beautiful article that by Henry Nouwen that was kind of the fertile ground from which this series sprung. And I recommend it to you if you wanted to look it up. It's Henry Nouwen's Waiting for God, and you can find it in a couple of places. But Nouwen starts off by talking about how in the beginning chapters of Luke's gospel, there are a bunch of people waiting. And so we're going to spend some time. Nope. That's okay. I can do it from here. I'm sure I can do it from here. I know. There are a bunch of people waiting. Marian, who are waiting in the beginning of Luke's gospel. And so we're going to spend some time thinking about who are those figures who wait in Luke's gospel today. So, and I printed for you the relevant passages that describe their waiting. And then from that, we're going to draw to see what we might extrapolate from that about our own waiting and what the work of waiting might be. So the first folks we meet who are waiting in Luke's gospel are Zechariah and Elizabeth. And they're in Luke 1, 5 through 25. And you've got that on your page in front of you. So if you want to take just a minute or two and skim over what Luke tells us about Zechariah and Elizabeth. So I'm going to ask the same three questions about each of these characters that we meet. But first of all, what do we know? Put aside what you maybe know from other things you might have learned about Zechariah and Elizabeth. But what in this passage from Luke's gospel can we know about Zechariah and Elizabeth? What does Luke tell us about them? At least in this section, what do you see? How can we describe them?
Pious and obedient.
They're going to be parents, yes.
Which is a blessing because she's been barren.
Yes. What else do we know about them? So she's barren. What else do we know about them? This barrenness is tied up in something else that Luke tells us about them. They're old, right? I had to look it up again in the NRSV that it says that she's getting on in years. I was really surprised by that kind of colloquial phrase, but they're old, right? Old enough to say she's getting on in years, right? We're not expecting this. Yes, they're righteous and blameless, it says. They're pious. Zechariah is in the priestly class. Which might tell us some things about him or might not. We might make some assumptions, but it probably means they have enough food most days. They're not struggling to get through a bare existence like many people in their society. It probably means they've spent most of their lives in a city, because that's where priests worked at that time, was in the temple in the city. Zechariah is almost certainly literate, reads the Hebrew scriptures, which puts him in a certain class or a certain distinction from many of their neighbors. So those are some things we can tell about them. And what does it tell us about how they wait? And Zechariah and Elizabeth, I think, wait differently, as Luke tells us. So what do you see about how Zechariah waits?
He's silent.
Yeah. Why is he silent? Yeah, so he's struck mute because he had doubts about this thing that they're waiting for. How about Elizabeth? What might you describe her waiting as? She's in seclusion. She's alone in her waiting, at least at the beginning of this passage. Yeah, She goes into her seclusion. Anything else we can know about her waiting? I thought that she seems courageous in this waiting. Maybe I'm reading into the text, but having a child when you're getting on in years is a brave act. And she seems ready for that. It doesn't seem that she faces it with the same sort of doubts or insecurities that Zechariah does. And she's faithful. And then the third question I'm going to ask you about each of these folks is, what are they waiting for? So what are Zechariah and Elizabeth waiting for according to this passage in Luke's gospel? A child, right? This baby. Yeah. They are also, though, waiting for the Messiah, right? We know that because Zechariah is the priest in the temple, and that is part of the work of the temple at this time, is this waiting, preparing Messiah stuff. And so they are, at the same time that they're waiting for their own child, they are waiting for the promise of redemption of Israel that is part of what Zechariah is doing in the temple work. I also thought it was interesting that in this passage, they wait for Zechariah for a while too. There's Zechariah and Elizabeth are waiting, and there's a crowd of people who have to wait on him too. So there's a bunch of waiters in this passage, a whole crowd of people, because I guess this encounter with the angel takes longer than anticipated, and he's not right back out as they expected. So, okay, the next person who's waiting, and I'm really going to ask you to try to put aside all the other things you know about her, because I bet we could go all day about what we know about Mary, but looking just at this small piece of Luke's gospel, let's see what we can learn about Mary. So take a minute to skim over that passage from Luke's gospel. And again, try to put aside so much that we know about Mary. Did I not make enough? It's always a nice thing to run out of handouts, but I'm sorry to leave you without it. Okay. All right, just in this portion of Luke's gospel, how could we describe Mary? What do we know about her? She's a virgin. She's confused. She's surprised. Yeah, she has her doubts, but they don't strike her mute. Yes. Yes. Yeah. She's young, right? I think she's young. Can assume she's young. She's engaged to be married. Just some basic facts about her, right? She might be afraid. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, one presumes that all these people are afraid because the angels have to keep showing up and saying, don't be afraid. So probably the angels are reading this the room and understand how they're feeling when they say, don't be afraid. So yeah, so Mary has a moment of fear in all of this. Yeah, so how does she wait is the next question. She's accepting. No, you're great. It's great. She waits with some confusion, right? She says, how can this be? But she does seem to accept it because she says, let it be with me according to this promise, right? So she becomes an active participant in the promise that's been made to her. Mm-hmm. Anything else we can see about what Mary's waiting for? How she waits? Uh-huh. Yes, and that stay tuned for episode 3. I'm not going to get to that part of this because I didn't want to steal Chad's thunder, but absolutely their waiting together becomes a really important part of this story. But yes, she's Elizabeth's relative of some sort, so there's some shared waiting that's happening here.
She's also waiting to hear what Joseph says.
Yeah.
She has a baby and it ain't yours, dude.
Yes, yeah. So what is Mary waiting for? She's waiting for the baby, but she's also waiting for Joseph's reaction, right? She's waiting for her wedding day. We know that. Even before the angel appears, Mary's already waiting for something. What else is Mary waiting for, according to this piece of Luke's gospel, do you think? Yeah, the angel makes a lot of promises about this baby, right? And Mary's not going to know all of them from this moment, for sure. So she's waiting for that. Yeah. I put that her waiting ends in that section of Luke's gospel. That's the nativity story. But in another way, her waiting continues through all of, right, until Christ is glorified. Her promises aren't going to be fulfilled for a minute or two, so 30-something years. She's also waiting for the Son of God, for the reign of David to be restored, as the angel has promised, right? So she's waiting for her own child, but just like Mary and Zechariah, she's waiting for these greater promises to be fulfilled, for work that God has promised to accomplish for her people. So she's got a personal waiting, and then she shares in this communal waiting. But she's got like a special insight into what that might look like because the angels delivered her this message, right? Okay. And then, yeah. Yes. She's got a lot of promises that she's waiting for. Oh, I don't know why that didn't. There we go. Okay. Yeah. So then we skip ahead a little bit to Simeon and Anna. This is after Jesus is born. So if you want to skim over these two waiting people. And I had to crop it off, but Joseph is actually here. He's just off scene in this image too. So if I weren't going for this artistic slanty design, you'd be able to see him too. But he's not disappeared yet. This one sort of lifts the curtain because this is sort of the scene in which Simeon and Anna's waiting is ended, when they kind of experience the thing they've been waiting for. So, but what do we know about them? Starting with that, what can we say about Simeon and Anna? They're old. They're very old. Yes. Anna is, what, 84 years old. We even have an age for her. That's very, very old for Israel. It's very young for here, but it's very old for Israel, so at that time. And Simeon, too, has said he's had a long, faithful life, right? And so we don't know exactly how old he is, but he's old, it's clear. What else could we say about them?
They're devout,
observant, faithful. Yeah, there's lots of description of how they worship, right? And so we know from that we can say that they're devout and faithful. Obedient, maybe, I think. Because they're not just believing God's promises, but they seem to be following really carefully the instructions about how to worship and how to meet God, the sort of guidelines of their religion. And then that kind of moves us into how do they wait? What do they do with their waiting? What does their waiting look like? Fasting. Anna's fasting all the time, it says. Yeah, maybe that's why she lives to be in 84. That's what some people would claim today. Yeah. Yeah, he's been made this promise from the Holy Spirit, right? And it really seems to settle into his heart because he really does believe it, right? Enough to pray that prayer that, like, this is it. I got it. I see. And another sign of that is Anna's role as a widow. That is an act of trust in God and in her community. So another way to handle that would have been to be remarried, right? It was very, very common for widows to remarry, and for women in this time frame, their security usually depended on a man, whether that was a son or a husband, who could keep them safe. And Anna chooses, in some ways, maybe a braver or a less certain way which is to take on the office of a widow, which as far as we can tell in ancient Israel was like a job. Like your church has priests and communication managers and AV folks. The temple had priests and widows and other folks like that. Like it was a title and it was a special role in the community. But that's an act of trust, right? To know that her community would provide for her what normally a husband or a son would have provided, which they would have been required by law to do for her if she'd had a husband or a son. And then the community, it's more of a charity trust situation that she steps into and takes that on to hold the office of a widow. So, anything else we can see about how they wait? So what are they waiting for? A Messiah? Yeah, how's it described in Luke's gospel? What are the words Luke uses to tell us about that? Yeah. Luke says that that's going to be the consolation of Israel. So again, like Mary and Elizabeth and Zechariah, Simeon has both his personal engagement with this, that he knows he's been personally promised that he won't die before this thing comes true. And that is tied up into the communal hope that this thing that he's been promised will be the consolation of Israel, will be this Messiah that they've been waiting for. So what does Luke tell us about how they know it's Jesus? Does he give us any clues? How they recognize him, this tiny baby? He's 8 days old, probably, when this happens. That's what the law says. Yeah, so Simeon, again, is like deeply in touch with the Holy Spirit, right? So he can recognize, even in this infant, all of this promises that he's been waiting for. Yeah. And Anna, too, it doesn't say as much for how Anna knows, but it seems to be tied up in that inspiration, that spirit led. Yeah. And she's a prophet who speaks in the temple, and everyone seems to listen to her. So those of you who have heard arguments about my role at this place, I would just like to hold up my sister Anna and remind you that she was doing the exact same work that I'm doing among you, which is to point to the Lord, right? To help us see Jesus, to lift up his presence among us in the community. That's her job description, as far as I can tell. And it's pretty much mine. So in case you're wondering. No, but she has this role of widow and prophet. And she is able to declare this, to recognize it, because she's got some sort of special insight from her gifts as a prophet, and to help the whole community see it too, with the way she speaks of him.
I've never heard of this in church.
It happens at the Feast of the Holy Name, which is on January 1st. And so it's not a very well. So you can certainly join me. I will be doing Eucharist in Grace Chapel and preaching on this on January 1st. But that is the reason why you don't hear it much, is it comes up. This would have happened on January 1st, right? That's like 8 days later. And so we mark this occasion with the Feast of the Holy Name. And that's always on January 1st. It's rather inconvenient. So, but that's when you'll hear it. I'll have to look it up and see if it shows up on the Sunday morning lectionary. But for sure, the place it happens every year is at the Feast of the Holy Name on January 1. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Yeah, we remember Simeon's story with the evening prayer. We read this song regularly at evening prayer. And that's really, to me, it's a really powerful thing. If you think of evening prayer as the close of the day, then to sort of pray that, like, I'm okay if this evening brings my death because I've been close to you today, Lord, is a really beautiful thing to do every day. Like to live each day as if that's, or to be ready to make that prayer each day, right? I'm not always ready to say that prayer every day, but the prayer book kind of holds this up as an example, right? That maybe every day we might be able to say, you were with me today, Lord, and so I'm at peace and I'm ready for what this night might bring, including perils and possible death, if that's the case. So, yeah, but to sort of think of the close of each day the way Simeon welcomed, you know, saw the end of his life and his promises fulfilled. Yeah. But yes, Holy Name, January 1, we'll be here. okay, this is my acknowledgement slide, and then I was going to talk to you a little bit about what I thought and what Nouwen says we can learn from these five characters. So Nouwen points out that this waiting is active. All these people waiting in Luke's gospel, they don't just sit around, right? Elizabeth goes into her seclusion, but seclusion is a particular kind of preparation for the birth of a baby. It's not just sit in your room and look at the walls, right? It's a way of entering into prayer. It's a way of keeping yourself and your child safe, right? It keeps you away from germs and other things. You might, not that they understood germ theory, but it would have had that effect even without them understanding it, right? A sort of isolation that would keep the baby safe. And it's a kind of active care for this child, even though it seems like pulling away, right? And then we see later on that her seclusion is not complete, right? She welcomes Mary to visit and they spend time together. So she's not entirely isolated. And Zechariah is active too, right? They all know he's mute because he's still at the temple all the time doing his work, even though he can't speak. His community recognizes that and sees him. And so he's still engaged in the things. And even before that, Zechariah and Elizabeth, even as they were getting on in years, as it says in the NRSV, were very engaged in their community in this time that they were waiting before this promise was made. Mary, too, her waiting is maybe more active than she wanted, right? We know she has to take that long journey. We know she's got all of the work. The time of an engagement was probably very, very busy, even though they're not planning like a great big ceremony. There are societal and other things that a woman particularly needs to do as she prepares for a wedding, her marriage. There are special prayers to go offer. There's sacrifices to be made. There's things she and her parents would have done together to prepare her for her wedding. So she's very active doing those things while also actively, right, nurturing this baby, protecting this pregnancy, doing all the things that are required with that. And certainly Simeon and Anna, part of why they're such strong examples in our scripture is they are very active in their waiting, right? Simeon is there every day. Anna is there fasting and praying. They have lots of work to do while they're waiting. And so do we. So I would commend that to you for sure. We could talk about this season of a transition as a time of waiting, but that doesn't mean we don't have things to do. Right? We also have things to protect, to nurture, to grow. We also have prayer and fasting and worship to do, to participate in. We also get to run around and share good news like all of these folks do, even in the midst of our waiting. Their waiting is also based in promises. None of these folks are going about their waiting like on their own. Right? Each one of them has, most of them have a specific encounter with an angel, but each one of them has had this moment where they know that God's truth is coming close to them. And that's part of what makes that waiting possible. They're able to wait and even to actively wait because they've been made these specific promises and they can point to them. They can name them. We can name them, right? We went through this and we could say, oh, this is where this thing was promised. This is where this is connected to that. They see, they've got some grounding for their waiting. And so do we. I would say, we've got grounding for our waiting too. Like, I'm really, really confident that God is calling someone really fantastic for us. And I'm really, really confident that St. David's has a really beautiful, bright future, that none of which is maybe, some of which is tied up in who our rector is, and a lot of it is not about our rector. It's about us, y'all, and the good work that's been here and the foundation here. And we have whatever number of rectors before who've been called to us to point to as our grounding in that promise. So I think we can wait in that same sort of groundedness, trusting in God's faithfulness in that. And their waiting is in some ways open-ended. So Simeon didn't know when this would happen. And he's now lived a very long life. And he still seems faithful in that waiting. Same with Zechariah and Elizabeth, right? They are willing to accept that they will become parents even in their old age, which is pretty shocking news. And Mary, too, her news is pretty shocking as well, maybe somewhat dangerous. And so there's some open-endedness that she has to have to accept what's been promised to her, right? And also this idea of the Messiah coming as a baby, like we're so used to that. That's just like right next to each, right? One verse follows the other. My nativity said it. I bought a great big one for my yard, a big inflatable one. And it says, for unto us is born the Messiah, the Christ child, right? Messiah, Christ child. Like it's all tied together in our vernacular. But that is not maybe what everyone in Israel was expecting when they were expecting a Messiah. I don't think they were expecting a baby, right? And they certainly weren't expecting a peasant child born in a barn, right? Connected to the royal line, but at least at that moment, that branch of that family is not in a place of a lot of power, right? So there's that open-endedness that Simeon and Anna demonstrate when they recognize, even in this baby, that this is the person that's been promised to them. That's not necessarily like self-evident to them, right? We have all these years of like studying the scripture and learning that, but that's a pretty surprising turn of affairs for these folks. So, and I think that's, this Advent has felt really powerful to me. I've been really grateful to be with you all for Advent this year, and this year, before I was here, I was in academia. And so Advent is a little different because everyone is so busy closing the school year. And it's very hard to like get into these places of like waiting and working and faithfulness and attentiveness to that. And it's been such a rich gift to be with you all for Advent this year and to really turn my attention to the things that the season offers. And like, so it's opened me up all new to how beautiful it is that Advent and winter coincide for us, that we get the light and the promise and that the solstice is going to be on third Advent. We kind of get that turn so close to the birth of the baby. Is all, none of this is news. This is how the church built it, but I'm really loving it. Like, it's just like landing with me in a really rich way. So I'm grateful to be able to do that with you all and to experience it. But it sort of reminded me of, it seems like the invitation is there to enter into this Advent in an open-ended way, right? To be surprised the way that Zechariah and Elizabeth were surprised, to find Christ, not just in little bitty babies, although do we not have the best little babies here, but to find Christ in other people whom maybe I'm not looking for him in, the way that Simeon and Anna maybe weren't looking for the Messiah in a tiny baby. So entering into it with you all has helped. I've been trying to also be open-ended in my Advent work this year too.
So what is the takeaway that you're wanting us to receive from these stories? That we have to hold these difficult opposing thoughts, confusion, mystery of faith, supernatural and invisible, and yet this is mixed with our faith, with hope, and with the joy of the season, and this is all going into the gumbo of being Christian.
Yeah, I mean, my takeaway for us this year is particularly that we might not think of waiting. Like, I put a waiting room as one of the slides, but I hope that that's like the furthest image from what this waiting feels like for us right now, both our Advent waiting and our new chapter rector waiting, that we recognize in these examples that waiting is not about like sitting still. It's not about passivity. It's not about just something happening to us. But in fact, in waiting, we're being invited to join into something that God is doing. And there's work to do in that time, right? So this kind of waiting is not sit in a room with a magazine until God calls your name. This kind of waiting is showing up to places where you expect to meet God. And it's putting your hand to the wheel while this work continues on, right? And it's this like adding my piece to this story, even though I might not see the end of it, right? Like I'm building my little part and then I'm gonna pass it on and someone else is gonna build another little part. And all of that is still that waiting, right? That someday it will be revealed what we were all building. And that we're waiting on that, but there's still stuff to do. That's the biggest part to me, is that active, that's what I hope you'll take away from these examples, is that none of their waiting is just sitting around, right? Even Elizabeth's seclusion is not sitting around. And none of our waiting, Advent waiting, rector waiting, whatever else we might be waiting for, should feel like that either. There's so much work, and there are so many places to meet God in a waiting time. So that's what I'm hoping you'll take away from it. Thanks. Thanks for asking me to get to, could you get to a point? I'm grateful for that. It's really good. Yeah, it was a good question. So Father Kristen's going to talk to you about waiting as a way of controlling the future, which I think is really exciting, about sort of how anxiety and waiting work together and what we might learn from that. And then Father Chad is going to teach on Christian community as the like fertile ground in which we wait. So, which is why I couldn't get to the visitation today. You need to spend some time with him on that. So, but that's where we're headed with this series. And then this is the book that it's based on, and also Dr. West pointed it out to us, and it's beautiful. If you don't have an Advent devotional yet, or you're looking for some reading, this is a great book, and I'd recommend it. But this is just one essay from it that's fueling this whole series. So I don't know what time it is. How are we doing? 10:43. You all know from my preaching, I'm not long. So, but I will let you go. Thank you so much for being here.
You can find more lectures and sermons on iTunes by searching for St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas, or visit our website at saintdave.org and click on the podcast button.